Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Update on the Internet of Things Super School Experiment. And so what it is basically now that sensors are so cheap and PLCs are so cheap, it makes sense to hook a sort of an army of sensors together on a central PLC and just poke around that space and find out what the best point is to develop a in-house module to replace the bevy of desperate equipment with plugs and doodads and modules and stuff like that to make an integrated thing which is cheap and has sort of integrated sensors. The sensors are so cheap, why not put them all together? And so that's the general idea, given that the individual components, although they themselves are very cheap. That was a car next to me. Sorry, I'm just driving off to an appointment at the moment. Although a thermometer is cheap, a single thermometer is cheap, you then factor in the fact that it will break under a certain time. It may not be calibrated. It has got limited ability to... It reads a temperature when the student picks it up and looks at it. And so it's good because it sort of locks that point of space into their... The student puts it in a beaker and reads it, so they know it is the temperature of the beaker. And it's responding. It's all various aspects of it. However, there are these hidden costs to it. In terms of longevity, putting it away in a place and stuff like that, as opposed to the Internet of Things U-Boot box, which does everything. Now, I don't know because I haven't built it yet, so I don't know whether it is cheaper, but I suspect it is cheaper and more powerful to run and achieves more. So for your dollar value, given that we're going to spend more on students, we are going to spend more and more on students to push them further and further, this seems a logical place to go. So traditionally, the Arduino boards, which are accessible, have got a sort of very thin slice in education, and that's in the background for when the students want to take on an Arduino project. So let's go through. In the, 90s or 80s, PLCs were about. So this programmable logical control. So we had the circuit, then we had the integrated circuit. Then we had all this variety of things that the user can program. The extreme end is a computer, which is a piece of electronics which people can program live. Now, coming up to it, what the heck is going on here? Oh, God. Please let me in here. I didn't know what's going on. Has there been an accident up here? Oh, you bastard. Oh, you're going to let me in. Thanks, mate. Okay, so I don't know what this is, but they've closed down some of the roads, so luckily, hopefully I'll get there on time. Okay, so let's look at, you've got the extreme device of the thermometer, then you've got PLCs, then you've got computers, and computers ultimately are your mobile phone, which can be lifted up and used. It's wireless, it's got all the aspects of computers then. So sitting beneath computers are these things called programmable logic controls, which are basically little computers with no operating system. That's probably one way to describe it. It doesn't have an operating system. It's got firmware, but it doesn't have a Windows and OS, whatever it's sitting above. So therefore, because it doesn't have an operating system, it's not easy for a keyboard or something to go in. Oh, people are just doing some gardening. garden here, so I'll get out of this. Yeah, so essentially it's like a really cheap computer chip, and that's just the computer chip, a little bit of memory, and you hook it up and you program it on a serial port, and then it functions. You load a computer program onto it. Now, these are coming down and down and price up in use. So there's a large variety of them. And essentially, you look at this strategically. I want this to monitor all the sensors, and then I want it to communicate to the internet. Now, communication to the internet is a specialist chip. Now, these specialist chips are so powerful that you can actually program the communication chip. It's got enough grunt, that communication chip, that it can run a few sensors off it. And that's what people do. They get a few sensors and just plug it into the communication chips, and there you go. We're one step back from it in terms of that we have so many sensors that it will overwhelm a communication chip. And also, some of these sensors draw power, so your entire sort of thought, and also the sensors are not calibrated to the degree. I want them calibrated to the hundredth of a degree and measure to the microgram in order to show effects as they begin happening. So the overall idea is that you begin to see an effect, and if you're fast, you can be intensely aware of it. So there's many reasons. One is that you've got these sensors, they're so good that if you don't computer control them, you can't see their error variation. So all the stuff we teach students about the thermometer, the humble thermometer, means that you have an error in measuring it, and you handle all of that. That's systematic and random errors that you're going through, the reliability. All this palaver doesn't make sense if you've got a digital component and you're reading it at a scale that is enormous. So your handheld thermometer is absolutely good, absolutely accurate, unquestionably the greatest thing to measure it to 10 degrees. Is it 0 to 10 or 10 to 20? Within the nearest 10, it's really accurate. And so the discussion of errors doesn't make sense. So in a certain sense, once you go digital, you also have to also collect all the data to observe it and compare it and do all these enormous things. So it's sort of like this chasm, this digital chasm that you have to cross and actually negotiate, because out of context, digital stuff is just enormously good, and it's wham bam, thank you ma'am, let's go on. But if you actually take a sensor and you thrash it, you can actually see the error in it, or and the overhead of doing it. Now, the digital sensor doesn't actually technically make sense to actually get the digital signal, pump the digital signal out to a display, look at the display and write it down. That's really quite dumb. What you really want to do is get the digital signal, keep it as a digital signal, and pipe it off to the internet to be stored, and then you look at the aggregate from the internet. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a bit unusual. Oh, gee whiz, this is showing low petrol. Oh, God. See how much I've got to go. I really didn't look at this. So it's going. No, I think I've got enough to get there. So I'm doing fine. Yeah. So there's a natural thing. Now, once something's digital, the actual sensor has actually a smallish footprint. Now, it can have a larger footprint if you actually build a standalone module which requires its own power supply and all this stuff. So you can actually deploy a small sensor, but its smallness can actually throw up all these other problems which guide sort of human interface design such that it's indeed large. So I will have a digital sensor at a school, which is a thermocouple, and it'll be a particular type of thermocouple. I don't know why they have it like this way. Such that if you stick it in a Bunsen burner flame, you destroy it. I know that. So that's essentially... Now, if you get it, there's this sort of large... Well, I could say large... The size of it, I suppose... Not, when I say an Apple, the Apple world, Apple, everyone thinks of a computer, a large... Oh, I don't know what it is. The size of a tea... Sort of a mug, a good-sized mug. And you plug wires into it, you plug power supply in it, you plug the supply in it, and there's this press screen, and it's really, really slow. And that actually is an imagined use, and dare I say, it's not the best one getting through. Yeah, so that's so if you can imagine, and it's like most things, like almost all technology in the old slate and inkwell, the desks were designed essentially in a fixed section to hold the ink in the old desk. So in the old days, people would have basically a pen and they would dip it in the ink and write on it. So, you know, I definitely remember a desk like that. So all the construction was designed around spilling ink. Now, once you did that, once you removed the ink, it took a few years for people to move out of those religious roads and actually sit on flat desks. So this is not very obvious. The ballpoint pen rearranged the classroom. Now, similarly, the new technology of thermocouples and mass sensors and every type of sensor you could think of, it changes the geometry, the position, the seating, the architecture of how you teach, regardless of the educational theory. So if you think about the in the old days, you had an ink bottle, you opened it up and you dipped your pen into the ink, and the ink went from the ink bottle into the pen, so that way into the pen, and then you wrote, and you had your blotting paper and you wrote like this, and that small technological thing defined the actual structure of the classroom. And so too, the digital stuff. We're still treating digital stuff as if they're digital replacements for analog machines. Now, so what I have is the bulk cost to buy a set of sensors sensors is you get them packets of five, and so the idea here is that why not put up five sensors in a row, and how do you build that? And so there's been a bit of a learning curve there. So the amazing thing is that it's a lot of it's been done for you. It's just not knowing how it's been done for you. So for you declare thermocouple one, start thermocouple one with reading these pins. You know, there's basically two power pins, which all thermocouples get, and then a clock and a digital write pin. I really don't quite know how it all works. And then there's a read pin. So these three pins. And so that means that what you do is that you arrange that on your board. You can digitally program that, select points on your board for it to work. Okay. So those point-to-point wiring, you can untangle it digitally untangle it. And it means that for Like, yes, you can buy price to price thermometer. You can a digital thermometer costs. It's got a greater range, more robust, but it's obviously hooked to electronics eventually. But price per price, it's if you wanted to do just on price to price, one digital thermometer would equal one analog thermometer. Then it's got these other things. But if you sort of accept your overhead, just having a look around here, if you accept your overhead of it, come across here. There are other options, because the digital thermometer has a certain footprint and stuff like that. Now, what you can do is you can superimpose the footprint of five thermometers in the space of one, and then five thermometers in a pH meter, five thermometers, a pH meter, and a scale system in the space of one. And then, given that it's digital, it doesn't require a PowerPoint. You can just get a battery pack. And so all of these things is sort of redesigning, reimagining things, and then obviously you create a whole new option. So you now have five temperature sensors, are all cross-calibrated, they're all accurate to a hundredth of, well, basically a tenth of a degree, I would expect would be the amount to go, and you suddenly got there. So yes, that costs a certain amount, but it's sort of lifetime is probably longer, and its ability to respond is also good. So I just will stop here and try and pick that up and give you some of the blow by blow things that I've got through trying to actually build this. So it's no picnic, my friend. Well, it will be the idea is it's supposed to be a picnic for the kids, but it's no picnic for the first man through Explorer. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.